The speaker is Mrs. Katarzyna Weselowska. She has a very attractive title, and I believe that she has also attractive content. So.
That's a challenge. Okay, once again, good afternoon, everybody. Or maybe I should rather say good and bad afternoon, actually, because today we're going to talk about polarity and subjectivity in language, about feelings, emotions, appraisals, everything which is in general called sentiment analysis. And, well, before I start, I'd like to say that I know that some of you already expressed some negative sentiments towards the term sentiment analysis, but since it's been used by the rest of the world since early 90s, last century, I don't feel like changing people's opinions concerning this. But on the other hand, I'm still not quite sure about the Czech translation of this term. And so far, I've been using the term postojová analýza, but you are very welcome to suggest any better terms. So please think about it during the talk, and we can discuss it afterwards. First of all, let me introduce people involved in a sentiment analysis task here in our department. It's me, sentiment analysis is my PhD thesis topic, and I was also given a grant by Charles University Grant Agency. So there are three more participants. It's Jan H. Jr., who already wrote his bachelor thesis on this topic. Then it's Jana Schindlerová. Jana mostly works on annotations, but she's also a great methodological and linguistic support. And then we have Miroslav Tinovský, who is ready to adapt our thread interface for subjectivity annotations, hopefully. We have two supervisors. It's Professor Hajčová, who is unfortunately not here, but she keeps the eye on us all the time, and then it's Dr. Ondřej Bojar. We also have some people outside our department. Nowadays, it's mainly Boris Kozlov, who works at the Center of Artificial Intelligence, Saarbrücken, Germany. Me and Boris, we are currently working on a classifier for Russian sentiment analysis, and we hope to build a more general classifier for the Slavic languages based on their common features. Then it's Michal Wiegand, and actually also Professor Dietrich Klakov at the University of Saarland, where I spent last 6 months, so we are discussing a topic a lot. And then it's Christine Leibrecht from Radboud University in Netherlands, and I'm currently writing a paper with Christine on intensifiers and polarity classification. We also have some people overseas. It's Dan Jurevsky from Stanford University. Dan is actually the guy who persuaded me or convinced me to start with that topic some 4 years ago, I guess, when we met in Germany. And we still stay in touch. Then it's Teresa Wilson. I hope to meet her this year or next year at Johns Hopkins University. So it's being negotiated by Sanjeev Kundampur. You probably know him. And, well, so to say, godmother of sentiment analysis among linguists is Professor Janice Wiebe at the University of Pittsburgh. Professor Wiebe is currently working on the relationship between the dependency structures and sentiment analysis. So she's working on a pantry bank. She's basically doing what we hope to do in a few years. Well, here's the outline of my talk. So, first of all, I'm going to introduce you the problem of sentiment analysis in general. Then I'll tell you something about subjectivity and polarity classification and the different levels. And, of course, opinion lexicon generation. And then I'm going to specify our experiments on Czech structures. And I'll conclude with a future work. So, problem of sentiment analysis works on the assumption that textual information can be divided into facts and opinions, like appraisals, feelings, positive or negative sentiments. Today, I'll be mostly concerned with positive and negative sentiments. The issue of sentiment analysis has been discussed since 80s or early 90s, but of course the progress in the area has started only recently with the rise of the World Wide Web, or actually more precisely the semantically defined Web 2.0. Everything which has user-generated content in it. So it's blogs, weblogs, social networks, and so on. And since then, the automated opinion discovery systems have been needed. There is lots of definitions of sentiment analysis. Actually, some people even call it opinion mining. This one is from the Handbook of Natural Language Processing by Bing Liu, and he says that sentiment analysis is a computational study of opinions, sentiments, and emotions expressed in text. What is it good for? Well, mostly people work on movie reviews and trying to find out whether people like or dislike a certain movie. But also there is a lot of companies who like to realize what people think about their products. Of course, companies are concerned with public opinion surveys concerning politics and about given candidates or issues. And lately, the prediction application has been very popular. People are trying to find out or predict the election outcomes or market trends from sentiment. There is even an application in America predicting basically who will be the winner of the same contest. So, lots of applications. How does it actually look like? Well, let's have such a chunk of text. I bought an iPhone a few days ago. It was such a nice phone. The touch screen was really cool. The voice quality was clear too. Although the battery life was not long, that is okay for me. However, my mother was mad with me as I did not tell her before I bought it. She also thought the phone was too expensive and wanted me to return it to the shop. This is a classical product review. So what kind of information can we extract for this kind of text? Well, as you see, there are some positive evaluations. There are also some negative evaluations. And of course, the first sentence is not an opinion. It's just a pure fact. I bought an iPhone a few days ago. Most of the evaluations, or polar states, as Janis Wiebe called them, have their targets, or the evaluated entities. So here it's the touch screen, the voice quality, and so on. Also, they have the sources. Well, not all of them are visible in this chunk of text, but of course, this is a matter of coreference and also of the assumption that mostly in the reviews, the reviewer is always the opinion holder. And of course, we have the polar elements, there are two kinds of them. There are polar expressions and polarity indicators. Well, the polar expressions are words which really contain some direct evaluation, whereas polarity indicators are more like a mathematical entities, so words which only indicates given polarity. This is the basic model used in sentiment analysis. It says that the target is usually an object with the features T, which is the hierarchy of components or parts, and A, which is a set of attributes. So it's a kind of a taxonomy. You can also imagine it, or it can be also represented by the tree, where you have the root node. It's an object, evaluated object, and then you have all the subparts or subtrees maybe, and all of them can be evaluated. As a result, we normally have something like this. It's a feature-based summary, so not only we evaluate the phone in general, but also we evaluate different features of this main object. Well, what's actually the task in subjectivity and polarity classification? Subjectivity classification, the task is to classify a sentence as opinionated or not opinionated. And when it comes to the polarity classification, it actually classifies whether an opinionated document expresses a positive or negative opinion. There are, of course, different levels on which you can classify a polarity. It's a word level itself, then it's a sentence level, and then people work with a document level polarity classification. On a document level, you need to determine whether a given document expresses positive or negative opinion towards a given object. And since we mostly work with the reviews, the assumption is that the opinionated document, let's call it D, expresses opinions on a single object O, and the opinions are from a single opinion holder H. Simple. There are several methods for document level polarity classification. Some of them are based on supervised learning. So the training and testing data are mostly product reviews. They are usually audio. It means that you have a rating from 1 to 5 stars for them. And for this classification, people usually use a naive bias classifier or support vector machines. It's actually very well described in this paper by Punk and others from 2002, if you're interested. Or it can be also based on unsupervised learning. There is a 3-step algorithm developed by Paul Turney, also 2002. What he does, he basically extracts phrases which contain or either adjectives or adverbs, and then he goes for a given context verb, going together with these adjectives or adverbs, and he estimates the orientation using PMI. PMI is a point-wise mutual information, and it simply says how often would the two events occur together if it would be random or independent. And then he computes the average object of all phrases in the review, and then he classifies the review as recommended if the average object is positive. But we are still in our project on the sentence level polarity classification. The task is more or less the same, so we're trying to determine whether a given sentence expresses positive or negative opinion towards an object. But in this task, all sentences to be classified are assumed to be subjective and carrying either positive or negative overall polarity. This is, of course, more fine-grained, so it can be used in different NLP tasks, such as question answering or text summarization. And this is how the feature design looks like. You see, we have two basic kind of features. It's word level features and sentence level features. Concerning word level features, they actually don't really express any explicit polarity. It's always a matter of context. And these are linguistic features related to the back of words features. Back of words here is actually all lemmatized unigrams in the data. So the ordering doesn't matter. And well, linguistic features are all the linguistic properties of the words. It can be disambiguation, because all the words are, of course, a generalized part of speech. So we need to think about polar cues as something ambiguous, or at least quite often. So you need to find out whether in the sentence, for instance, like is a verb, and hence has a positive polarity, or whether it's only a preposition. Like here in this example, the durian fruit smells like hell. The polarity is even opposite. And there are some other words like trust, which can be verb, can be noun, and there are several of these examples described in literature. Also, we need to think about word-net hypernyms, because it's very useful to add the hypernyms of the words in a given sentence, because it really may compensate data sparseness. People are aware of it, so they developed something which is called scenty wordnet, and it's basically the wordnet containing only evaluative words and phrases. So if the wordnets are still interlinked, we hope to maybe get some automatic translation of this data by means of a Czech wordnet. This is also described in these two papers by Bacianella and Balamurali. I've already read this article, but those of you who are going to Language Resources and Evaluation Conference, then Mr. Balamurali will give a talk on this topic there. Another important linguistic feature on a word level is a prominence, and it's basically the depth of a leaf node representing word in a syntactic parse tree. Let's have a sentence like this. Fortunately, the court has multiple independent bases to reject the government's motion. So you see that in this sentence we have two polarity items. It's reject and it's fortunately. But since fortunately has a lower depth, the overall polarity of this sentence is actually positive. So we think it matters. Also, the important feature is, or the important question is, whether the given expression is a part of is a main predicate of a sentence, because main predicates are more predictive towards polarity than other words. So again, here in this example, you have two negative polarity items. It's war and terror, but the overall polarity is still positive because the main predicate is positive. Clause type also matter, so you still need to take into consideration whether the given word is a part of a main clause or subordinate clause. It's visible in this example. I hated that he likes me. And you need to think about intensifiers, about whether the given expression is preceded by intensifier, which is useful for fine-grained analysis. And this is actually the work the paper I work with Christian Leibrecht on. And Theresa Wilson says in her PhD thesis that it's also necessary to think about the intensity of a given evaluative or polar expression itself. So she's basically building the scales, and she says that different polarity expressions have different strengths. So some of them are stronger than the others, like outraged is definitely stronger than irritated, for instance. And now we can move to the sentence level features. These can actually express some explicit polarity, and it's linguistic features and prior polarity features. Well, prior polarity here means only the number or total number of positive or negative polar expressions in a given sentence. But concerning linguistic features, well, as I said, the prior polarity features are fairly coarse. It doesn't really count. So we need to add some features which impose further linguistic restrictions, like number of polar nouns, verbs, adjectives. The strength is different. And then we need to take into consideration the number of polar expressions in a main clause, number of strong polar expressions like outrage, number of negated polar expressions. Negation switches polarity, so it's one of the most important features. We are already handling negations in our work. I wrote a paper on it last year, but there's a very nice work by Christopher Potts from last year too. It's called On Negativity of Negations, and he illustrates how it actually works with polarity detection and negation. We also need to think about but clauses, because usually, if you have but, the conjunction but, in the sentence, it means that the polarity of one part is opposite to the other part. So it deserves a special treatment, and we consider this to be two sentences with a different polarity. So it looks like this. One part of the sentence is positive, whereas the other part is negative, and of course it works the other way around. Another important feature is are the weakening clauses. Everything which started with although, in spite of, even though, despite, and so on, because it weakens the polarity of a sentence. Also, we need to think about comparative sentences. Also, as I said, as I mentioned before, there is lots of papers written on it. The best one which offers a classification is by, oh my gosh, Ganapathibhotla and Liu from 2008. And they say that in sentiment analysis, there are three types of comparative sentences which matter, and these are non-equal gradable comparisons, like the Intel chip is faster than that of AMD. Then the equative comparisons, the picture quality of camera X is as good as that of camera Y, and also we need to think about superlative comparisons, but this is a matter of also the broader discourse. Well, we also need to pay attention about conditional sentences. They also deserve a special treatment. Like here in this example, if your Nokia phone is not good, buy this great Samsung phone. Because in these if sentences, normally there is no evaluation expressed because it's only a condition. But it doesn't mean then you can omit the second part, the main clause. As I said, the one of the most important tasks in sentiment analysis is the opinion lexicon generation. There are several approaches to the opinion lexicon generation. One of them is the dictionary-based approach described in Bana and others 2008. And it's a pretty nice and very simple method based on bootstrapping. So you basically have a very small set of manually collected words and their orientation. And then you grow this seed set by searching for the synonyms and antonyms in WordNet. And you add the newly found words into your lexicon. And then you go for next iteration. And you basically do it until there are still some new words in your lexicon. So this is one of the approaches. And the other one described in this paper from 1997 is based on syntactic or co-occurrence patterns. Again, you have a small set of manually connected or collected opinion words, but this time only adjectives. But you have a set of different constraints. The method is called sentiment consistency, and what they do is basically they say that if there's a conjunction like and it connects to adjectives, then both of them must have the same polarity orientation, because it's not very likely that someone would say this car is beautiful and difficult to drive. They would rather say this car is beautiful but difficult to drive, and this is how they treat another connectives, like either or, neither nor, or and some other. So this they do the same for adverbials, and there is a whole lexicon based on this method for English. We decided not to use any of these methods, but our Czech subjectivity lexicon is based on methodology by Jiko and Hoffman. This is described in their paper from EACL 2009. And we decided to base our subjectivity lexicon on subjectivity lexicon for English. Those of you who take the online Stanford course by Dan Juratsky know that there are several subjectivity lexicons for English. It's a Harvard lexicon. It's a Bing Liu opinionated lexicon. There's a general inquirer lexicon, but we decided to use this one. It's a multi-perspective question answering corpus, and this subjectivity lexicon is part of it. We decided to use it because it's the biggest one. It contains almost 7,000 lemmas, and yeah, it was issued by Janice Weber again and others in 2005. What we've done was the automatic translation using Cheng by Ondřej and Zdeněk, and afterwards we did some manual processing on it. So at the end of the day, all in all, we have almost 5,000 Czech polar expressions, and nowadays we are testing it. So we are building a classifier based on these expressions, and we are trying to find out whether they are significant. And in the future, we'd like to enhance this Czech subjectivity lexicon with some expressions from Czech WordNet, hopefully. So what we've done on a Czech sentence level polarity classification. We used three data sets. First was from a Czech news website aktualne.cz, from the home section, and these were articles primarily concerned home politics. You maybe remember the situation before elections 2010, so we supposed the text to be evaluative, but they were not as evaluated as we supposed, unfortunately. Then we got from our former colleague Vašek Novák some data from the retail server MallCZ, and lately we've been working with the reviews from the Czech movie database. Concerning the aktuálne dataset, well, these are altogether more than 500,000 words in 1,661 articles, and we've done some manual categorization on it, so we obtained some 175 opinionated articles, lots of articles with no polarity, and also some articles labeled as undecided by human annotators, which is maybe surprising, but it's pretty common. And they actually done some experiments with Mechanical Turk, and sometimes it turned out that people were not able to decide whether some sentences are actually evaluative or not. We had two annotators, and altogether they annotated 410 segments of text from 12 randomly chosen opinionated articles. By segment here I mean not only sentences but also headlines and some subtitles. So altogether we got 6,868 words, almost 2,000 unique lemmas. First time we did the annotation on it, the primary instruction was simple as can be. Should you like or dislike an entity occurring in a segment because of what that segment says, tag the entity accordingly. People were working in a simple Word document format, and they were only tagging the entity either in italics or in bold, depending on if the evaluation was positive or negative. The inter-annotator agreement was 1.63 coins kappa for all polarity classes, and we tagged about 30% of sentences in total. We experienced, of course, lots of problems in tagging, as described in my paper to be issued this year. Some of them were of a technical nature, and these were luckily easily resolvable. Mostly they were caused by unclear instructions, so we tried to improve it, and you'll see that the results from the movie database are much better, but of course because of the data as well. Some of them were just a matter of the question whether the annotators should tag the preposition as a part of the target or not, or where are the borders of the constituents in a sentence, and so on and so forth. Then we've experienced some mistakes caused by the wrong interpretation of annotator instructions or by problematic language features. As I said, it was the first annotation, so we had no experience before. And I must say again as well that the boundary between these two phenomena is not very clear, so, but we still felt that there are two different categories. We also experienced some difficulties with abstaining from the annotator's personal sympathy or antipathy for the given target. This is a problem, and we can't really solve it only by increasing the number of annotators. So if you have any suggestions concerning this, I would be very happy to hear them afterwards. And of course, the problem was the linguistic background of annotators, because sometimes they tended to annotate some polar expression at any rate. So even if the sentences were not really evaluative, they still tended to tag at least something, like here in this example. On the other hand, sometimes they omitted some polar expressions in our sentences. So here in this sentence, you could say that the fact that some dissertations are missing in the library is negative, but none of our annotators considered that to be negative. Another problem was caused by a vague interpretation of targets in polar sentences, because of course you have different levels on which you can determine the targets. So here in this example you can see that the annotator A consider as negative the fact that the house was auctioned unsuccessfully, whereas the annotator B tagged the house as because it failed in the auction. Well, we put this down to the fact that one can see the subjectivity structure, the source, evaluation, and target as a parallel to the structure, agent, predicate, and patient. But this is also one of the reasons why we'd like to observe sentiment or subjective sentences in a Prague dependency tree bank. Another problem was the discrepancy between the local and global polarity, because sometimes one part of the sentence is evaluative, but the sentence as a whole is rather neutral. So here you can see that, of course, the candidacy of that guy was supported by some respondents, but it was only by 13% of the respondents. So we also need to do some research on quantifiers, for example, and things or features which are involved in such kind of sentences. Last but not least, we experience different readiness of annotators to accept the opinion expressed in a given sentence. Not really sure if one can do anything about it, but it was the most frequent source of disagreement. And again, we put it down to the journalistic style of the texts or of a data set from the news website. So one of the annotator was against the non-intervention in the whole park, and the other one actually liked that fact, and this was the source of disagreement. Concerning auxiliary data, altogether we had 158,000 words, or almost 159. So it's a much bigger data, as you see. It was more than 10,000 articles and 12,000 lemmas. And they were already divided into two groups by the authors. So we had some positive, and we have a group of positive and group of negative reviews. These data were much better because they contain some explicit polar expressions in a very prototypical use. On the other hand, we experienced a different set of complications, such were grammatical mistakes or typing errors. So, unfortunately, we got some additional lemmas in our lexicon. And this was the source of incorrect categorization at the end of the day. But we still decided to build a very simple polarity classifier. Of course, we only had 410 segments, so of course we are not able to provide the full-scale evaluation. But as I said, we just wanted to try how even a very simple statistical methods can be of use to linguistic research on polarity. Hansa says it's very simple, but to me it's all Greek, so I'm not really sure. But it's well described in his bachelor thesis, so you can read it there. So we attempted to classify segments according to whether they contain a polar state and determine its orientation, which are two separate classification tasks. So we did a lemmatization based on a tagger by Professor Hajic, and we obtained the lexicon where every lemma had its part of speech tag, and also we had the negation in our lexicon. Afterwards, we attempt to automatically generate a polarity lexicon from the training data and compute some measurements of how good a given lexicon item is an indicator of polarity. Well, first of all, we of course needed to estimate the probability. So to basically answer the question, when you encounter in a given lemma, is it a part of a polar segment, yes or no? So we use some aggregation, like a simple sum, and we wanted to count the indicative strength using lemma precision. You can find the description of this in a Janice Wiebes work from 2004, but you see that here L stands for lemma, X is it's a polarity class, so it's a frequency of all lemmas in the segment with a given polarity divided by all the lemmas in the dataset. Of course, we needed to compute the baseline, so it's a probability that the randomly chosen word indicates polarity, yeah, some polarity X. This is how we did it. And so we obtained the indicative strength probability estimation for every lemma. Then we did the classification. We used two classifiers, the lexicon-based classifier and the naive-based classifier. So we used the back of words model, which is assuming the indicator strength measurements over all lemmas in a given segment. And then it selects the polarity class with the highest accumulated value in the desired measure. And if the lemma is not in a lexicon, we have a special tag unseen. Also, we use the naive bias classifier where we took, for features, we took lemmas. We also used some filtering, so we filtered by frequency, we used weighted filtering by frequency, we used statistical significance filtering, and filtering by part of speech. And again, important feature was the sentence level negation. Evaluation and results. We, for all the experiments on segments, use a one-to-one train test split and tenfold cross-validation, and then we computed accuracy, recall, precision, and F-score. Everything is done by Honza Hai Jr. And, well, at the end of the day, the filtering methods proved to be useless, unfortunately, and the naive bias classifier was outperformed by the lexicon-based one, which is pretty well known in the state-of-the-art classifiers. So we could expect it. Here you have some numbers. This is the baseline comparing performance on training and test data. PC is the shortcut for the lexicon-based classifier. And then you can see the bias classifier. We use the precision. Well, this is additive precision, and it's the precision minus baseline, and multiplicative precision is precision divided by baseline. And again, PMI, point bias mutual information. This is a lexicon-based classifier using PMI with various filters. concerning the shortcuts, well, usually these stands for adjectives and nouns, verbs, and all the part of speech tags. But as you see from the table, it didn't really matter, so we decided not to use filtering anymore. But recently we've done the same kind of annotation with, of course, improved guidelines on the data from the movie database. Again, 4,010 segments, because we wanted to compare it with the data set from Aktuálně.cz. And we had 43 opinionated articles. Again, sentences, headlines, subtitles, everything. So the size of the data was more or less the same as the previous data set. We again had two annotators, and as I said, improved guidelines. Here you can see the very first results. Unlabeled is for the cases where we didn't care about the orientation of polarity. We only wanted to know if it's neutral or polar. And the labeled are for the chunks of the text with the orientation. So, well, the F-score for both is pretty low, but it's because there were not that many segments with both polarities. So that's why. But the rest of the results is pretty good. It's these are state-of-the-art results, totally. And this is the agreement on text parts of texts. So you can see that the annotators mostly agreed on source. Well, the target, not really, but here the problem probably is that, again, there were not very clear borders in the sentence constituent. So some tag like, I don't know, black table, and the other one like a big black table or something, and then this was the source of disagreement. And the agreement on the polar expressions was also pretty high, at least compared to the previous data. Future work, this is what we'd like to do, is the morphological categorization and corpus analysis of evaluative expressions. This has been done for English already. There is a whole book on it by Susan Hansen. Then we need to take into consideration the compositionality and syntactic patterns of evaluative phrases. This is something very new. This is the work done by Manfred Klenner and the sentiment analysis group in Zurich. Then I'm trying to provide some formal description of evaluative phrases by means of different formalisms. I'm currently thinking about construction grammar, but I'm not decided yet. We'd like to build the semantic scale of Czech subjectivity clues. This is work done by Chen already for English, or also by Theresa Belsen. So we'd like to do something concerns more like a formal semantics for Czech as well. And of course, we'd like to work on fine-grained analysis. Since the data from the reviews show it's necessary, we will probably have to deal with a topic-related sentence-level polarity classification, again, very well described in the works of Michal Wiegand and Dietrich Klakov. Of course, we'd like to implement the Czech subjectivity lexicon into Prague Dependency Tree Bank during this summer, hopefully, and then we will survey the relationship between dependency and subjectivity or polarity on a sentence level. And in the future work, we hope to move forward to the document level and to work on a document level polarity classification with the help of our colleagues, because this is the matter of discourse structure analysis. So we hope to work with a discourse structure analysis group because there's a lot of evaluations like this one from the example, like something is brilliant, however, it can't hold up. So if there will be the discourse level in the Prague dependency tree bank data, it could help a lot. This is exactly what Professor Wiebe is working on nowadays, but it's also described in the literature already. Very important for sentiment analysis or polarity classification is coreference resolution. I described the objects and their attributes and their features. So sometimes in sentiment analysis it's very difficult to realize whether the given evaluation is or concerns the object itself or some of its features. So it's also it would be also good to look it up in a dependency data if possible. Well, named entity recognition, of course, mostly companies want to find the possible targets of the evaluation, and named entity recognition is basically searching for these targets. So in the whole text, so it's also useful to have a good named entity recognizer. And I know that there are some people working on it here, so it would be great to cooperate. And well, to conclude, there is, of course, there are a lot of expressions or verbs which are subjective or evaluative. So we thought it would be nice if they are now collected or they are part of our subjectivity lexicon, but it would also be great if they could be either extracted or, on the other hand, added to the to Valex, and if they would get their valency frames, and so on. So this is the end of my talk, and feel free to express your sentiments.
Thank you very much for your exhaustive. It is positive explanation. And I will ask who has a question or remark or something. Oldřichu.
You always have like synsets or chains of words which are either hypernames or hyponyms of each other. So it's useful to find, for instance, the hyponyms, and then you go for hypernames, and then you can enrich the lexicon because they have the same polarity orientation value.
Yeah, okay, then you see, you know, some sentence, like, you know, some per sentence, and how do you use the knowledge of hyponyms or hypernyms? How does it help you?
The thing is that you extract the given word from the sentence, and you look it up in a WordNet, and then you get all the synonyms or antonyms, depends on what you need, and then you enhance the lexicon. On the lexicon, you can build a better classifier if you have all the hypernyms from WordNet.
Okay, so it's like if you encounter a word that you don't know which sentiment it has, but you know a hypernym and any sentiment, then
no, you
that's
just
no.
No, you again use the word you get from the WordNet. You can again use it in your classifier, so you get the polarity by means of the classifier of the given word.
Okay. It's very nice that we have so many beautiful expressions in Czech. Don't you have an example or some longer sample of the 4,000 or 5,000 words in Czech? which you collected. Don't you have it on the computer? Could you please show it to us?
Yeah. Sure. Well, yeah, you can watch it like this. Awesome. It worked, but...
A related question. Do you think we have more positive words or more negative words?
Well, the experience from abroad is that normally they have more positive evaluative or polarity items than negative. But I don't know why. On the other hand, we have negation or constituent negation, which is expressed by the particle which stands separately. So even though in the lexicon there's more positive polarity items, it still doesn't mean that there is more of them in the language, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. Can we improve it? It's not really readable. Thank you. Well, actually, from the translation, we obtained more than 8,000 expressions. So we did some manual processing, and you may find something which is not really maybe evaluative or something which has a wrong orientation, but it was way too much for me. I was reading through it many times, so maybe some of the words doesn't really belong to this kind of lexicon. On the other hand, as I said, we are testing it, so if it works, probably doesn't matter.
Can I ask you, what do you do with such words which are relative or vague? Fast is good for in some with some objects and bad with other objects. How do you treated?
This is exactly the matter of the topic related sentiment analysis, and it's always related to the, like, if it would be the article about, I don't know, cars, then it probably would have a positive value. But the thing is that different classifiers are based on different data sets, and that's why people are testing it at the moment in the world. And once they build a classifier on the specific review, like for the movies or the cars, it doesn't normally work for some other topics. So that's why they treat it by means of the topic related sentiment analysis, where you generate the keywords for a given topic. And you assign the polarity of that word concern given topic. So, yeah, well, it's probably much easier to build a topic-related classifiers. They work much better. On the other hand, you can't apply them to any kind of the text. So, if I would work for a company and they would, I don't know, sell cameras, then I would probably build for them a special classifier concerning this kind of stuff. But it wouldn't work on a movie databases. So. Yeah, people build different classifiers for different kind of texts.
Who else, please?
I would like to question. My question is related to the previous one. I'm not exactly sure that all of the opinions on the first slide. I think you classified text into parts like statements that are factual, and there are parts which express some opinion. I'm not yet completely sure that all opinions are actually classifiable as good or bad.
Totally.
There might be kind of a factual opinions, like I think this floor is made of oak, but it doesn't make it good or bad. It's just probably oak.
True.
So, Do you try to make these... But you said that you actually try to classify all opinions. So how is it? Do you really try to classify all opinions as good or bad? So does every expression of something being fast, or you said fast, yes. So does every fast end up being classified as good or bad, or are there some adjectives or adverbs that are simply not classified?
The answer is yes, some of them are not classified. It's not even possible, actually, because of course you need to think about explicit and even implicit evaluations. Sometimes you basically people, I was so visible in the data set from Aktuálně, it says that the evolution was there somehow hidden in the factual sentences, and it's a matter of context, it's a matter of irony sometimes. These are the things we are not able to describe by means of sentiment analysis, and even the state of the art is nowadays 82%, which is pretty good in classification, but the rest is caused by irony, by this type of sentences where you basically are not even able, even as a human annotator. The thing is that they did some experiments with Mechanical Turk. They let people annotate evaluative sentences online, and people were not, human annotators were not able to agree with each other. They only agreed in 79 for Mechanical Turk, 79% of the sentences. So if we are not able to agree with each other as a human, don't think you can do it automatically. So, sorry.
By the way, don't you have food? Maybe only food in plastics.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Probably not. But there are some ridiculous expressions, of course. So if you go through it manually, you will totally detect them. But apparently they work as a polarity indicator, so we don't think that it would be a good idea to get rid of them anyways if they work as indicators. So as I said, we are testing the lexicon at the moment, and as soon as we get the results, we'll see if it works or not.
Just small remark, because according to my experience, many words which are, for example, positive for me are negative for my children. So the polarity sometimes depends on the age, or something is good for grown-up and bad for teenagers and so on. And especially the vocabulary of teenagers changes very rapidly. Yeah, and something which was really good, the expression which was used for best things 2 years ago are something which is not very good now for teenagers, for example.
Sure. Can I answer this question when I'm 40? that's highly probable, but I'm not aware of any systematic research on this topic, like age-related sentiment analysis. But of course,
because sometimes I'm confused with my children.
Yeah, I can imagine that. But yeah, maybe someday in the future we will be able to compare, for instance, this subjectivity lexicon with the one we'll generate on the teenagers' reviews of anything. Yeah, some years in the future. Yeah, thank you for this remark. It could be interesting research. Yeah.
So I propose you to use as a material reviews which we write for diploma thesis, doctoral thesis. I would like to know if I write positive or negative. I believe that I write positive, but I am afraid, listening to you, that I write negative. So it's a topic for
thank you.
Who else want to? If not, so thank you once more for your interesting talk, and we have no seminars the next week and the next after 2 weeks. No, and the next is on May 14th, Professor Leach. So thank you.